Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Pump day?
Yes, it is hump day. It is Cecil Lammy sitting in for Mike Evans today. Always a pleasure to be on the air with my good friend Mark Schlereth. And Stink, you know I'm over the moon, brother, because I got to go to UCL Training Center yesterday and talk to Vic Fangio, talk to Joe Flacco, and actually see the 2019 Denver Broncos.
Well, which is awesome. I mean, as they're currently constructed, obviously they're going to go through a few more machinations and some changes in the draft players, and I'm sure there's going to be a few more guys signed, off the street type of thing. So it'll be interesting to see exactly how that pans out. But I got to tell you, man, the craziest thing happened to me yesterday. I'm spreading topsoil in my yard while you're over there watching football and doing your job. Not me. I'm doing yard work. And like, instantly got sick. Like it's never happened to me before. You don't know where you can feel something creeping up on you?
Oh, you always do.
Right? Within 2 minutes, my stomach was killing me. I was going to yak. And I went up. I quit working. I put my stuff away. Went up, took a shower, got into bed at 6, and was out until this morning at about 4:45.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's very unlike you.
No, it's the crazy. Now, I still, I'm a little, I'm better. I feel better.
You're better now?
Well, I'm not 100% better.
But here's what it is, though. You know what
I
happened?
I couldn't leave you hanging by yourself. Like, all of a sudden, you walk in here and go, yeah, hey, Stink's not showing up, so.
All right.
Yeah.
3 hours of straight Broncos talk. Here we go. But you were just in the zone. I think that's why you didn't feel it coming on. You always feel it coming on.
Yeah, you do, right? You always feel like something's creeping up on you. It's like cheap underpants, right? They always are creeping up on you. Like you, when you get sick, something's creeping up. Anyhow, hopefully your time at UCL Center didn't make you sick. I mean, hopefully you kind of like what you saw.
No, I liked what I saw from Courtland Sutton. And is that the guy that takes the largest step of the year two players? Because Philip Lindsay set the bar high. Bradley Chubb set the bar high. Courtland Sutton had a good year.
Mm-hmm.
But is he the player that, looks the most improved? Because he did to me yesterday.
Yeah. I think, what's interesting, talking to people who know, more than I do, because they're over there all the time. You look at him coming out, Cecil, and you would know this better than I do, but I've talked to a lot of people that said, hey, man, he's just a raw, unbelievable athlete, but just really raw. So I'm prepping for a game. I'm calling the game I called. It was either week one or week six, and I think it was the week six game. I'm talking to John Elway, and he said, yeah, look at the kid is unbelievable, just an unbelievable athlete, but still is a very raw route runner. And there's so much nuance to running great routes. There's so much body lean and positioning and John was just like, he still cuts off the wrong foot, has a tough time, adjusting routes. Like, you're running a deep over, where do you hunker down? Where do you start to slow down a little bit so you don't run yourself into coverage, so you give the biggest window, stuff like that.
Right.
I was telling you, I was watching some tape at the tight ends yesterday, and it was a kid from Texas A&M, just as a route runner.
Jay Sternberger.
Yeah, Jay Sternberger. And had such a good, he got a release off the ball, inline, release off the ball, pressed it up the seam, and you see him just leaning into the defender, selling the over, right? I'm going to go over. And right at the top of the stem, as soon as the DB kind of opened up to take care of the over, bam, he hits him on a corner. And, it's instant 4 yards of separation, and there's nothing you can, it's just like, the route was so damn good. I don't care what he runs the 40 in. The route was so good. I don't care if he runs a 4.7 and that DB runs a 4.42. That DB is not going to defend that route with the way he ran that route. And that's where Courtland Sutton stands to make the biggest jump from year one to year two, is that he has to understand the nuance. He has to understand the body mechanics. He has to understand all of those things. And as a raw player last year, he wasn't ready for that. And a lot of times when you're not ready for that, what do? They run you, get outside the numbers and, run a nine or a comeback.
Run a go route.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's what they end up doing. So it was just, very interesting to watch, watch that development. But there's no question his love for the game. He is an infectious type of attitude, the way he prepares. And he would just be a fun guy to be around, I think. Like, just having my, minor interactions that I've had with him, he just feels like a guy that is eager to learn and that would be fun, you know, be fun to have around.
He's humble.
Yeah.
I remember one of the first times I talked to him last year in the locker room, I said, "You're the steal of the draft." And I explained to him the story. I landed at Love Field. I thought it was DFW. I didn't know there was a second airport. That's just on me.
Mm.
But I flew Southwest, so I landed in Love Field last year for the draft, and there's this big mural, like two stories tall,
right,
of Cortland Sutton, SMU. I'm like, yeah, Cowboys going to take him. Worst kept secret in the draft. And they didn't.
Right.
So I told him, dude, you're the steal of the draft. And he was like, no. You know, he's like deflecting it. So he's humble and stink. He's hungry.
Yeah. And I, you know what? And I think that's the biggest point. Speaking of hungry, how about the fourth quarter of the Nuggets last night?
Right.
I mean, you want to talk about it. You know who was eating last night? Jamal Murray.
The Blue Arrow.
Yeah. Do you like that nickname, by the way?
Not really.
I don't either.
I really love Jamal Murray. Like, love that guy.
Right.
I don't know if I love that nickname.
I'm watching the game, and you know, I love the announcers. They do a great job. But, you know, you're getting all giddy about the Blue Arrow.
The Blue Arrow.
And I was just like, yeah, I'm not sold on the, like, there's got to be a better nickname than the Blue Arrow.
Yeah, because Jamal Murray is a badass. And
right.
Blue Arrow sounds like a C-level superhero.
Right, it's like the Green Lantern. Nobody, like, if the Green Lantern shows up to save you, you're like, oh, gosh, here we go.
Here he goes.
Green Lantern's here. Woo-hoo, whoop-de-doo, Basil. You know, I mean, we're going to die. Like, maybe just the Arrow. I don't know why it's got to be the Blue Arrow.
Blue Arrow?
I don't know. But to start off, what was he, 0-for-8? And to wind up, I think he ended up 8-for-16. He was phenomenal. The Joker last night was, that was a big time, because there was a time they were down by 19. That was a big time effort and a big time kind of gut check performance. You lose two in a row at home, and you're either getting swept or you're losing the series 4-1.
Right.
Right. So, you know, obviously knocking down shots and doing all that, but I loved the aggressiveness. I loved the, you know, the taking it to, like, you're taking the drive and then you stop and step back and hitting 15-footers, 17-footers, a couple of three-pointers where he stepped back. He was phenomenal last night. There's no question about that. Now, again, we'll have Earl Boykins on. I wonder how sustainable that is, especially when you go on the road. Like, if you're counting on Jamal Murray to get hot and light it up in every fourth quarter and go, you know, 8-for-8 down in the fourth quarter, then you're hanging out at the dispensary, because that's just not going to happen. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how they end up, you know, playing on the road. But I have to think that fourth quarter and coming back from 19 is a huge kind of a huge burst or a huge confidence builder.
By the way, that clank you just heard is Will Barton missing another shot.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that was bad.
He started off, he was 0-for-2, but they were bad, two bad-looking shots, and I'm sitting there at my house going, okay, like, can we put the stop sign on the green light to shoot? Can we just put the stop sign on that?
They've got the Blue Arrow and the green light. Mm-hmm. Well, how about just more Malik Beasley, please? Anyway, but if you look at the Denver Broncos, the draft coming up next week, 1 week from today, I'll be flying to Nashville for that. And Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network has a very interesting player and maybe a pipe dream for the Broncos at 10. We get to that next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Well, thank God the draft is almost here. Next Thursday, it starts in Nashville. I will be there broadcasting for you live right here on The Fan. Cecil Lammy sitting for Mike Evans with Stink, the great Mark Schlereth. And, well, thank God the draft's almost here, because then mock drafts will be done. Mock drafts will be over.
It is interesting, though, like all these, like all the players and all the mock drafts and how you kind of look at football teams. And, you know, one thing I've said several times here in the last few weeks is what a great job the Broncos have done disguising what their intentions are. And I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot of value. Like, look at the difference between Arizona and Denver. Arizona is now trying. No, seriously, don't look at us. No, we don't. We honestly, wink, wink. You know, we honestly don't know what we're going to do.
Ooh. Josh Rosen's really good.
He's really good. We really like Josh Rosen, you know. And so it's interesting to me to see one team play this in a masterful manner. The Broncos have been masterful. And this is not something they've done in the past as well. All the visits they've had, they brought all the quarterbacks in. They have created value at number 10. And I told you, I said this on Monday, and I don't believe the Giants at 6 are taking a quarterback. I think they're taking a real live football player. And there's several of them in the draft. There's not a ton of them.
Right.
But there's several guys that truly have kind of quote-unquote first-round draft status. And then, and I've always said this, after about 15, to me, the difference between 15 and 45 is pretty minuscule for the most part. Some drafts are different, but for the most part, if you're just generalizing, that's kind of how I feel about the draft in general. So I think that the Giants are going to go, no, we need a difference maker. We got one last year in Saquon Barkley. Knowing Dave Gettleman, like I know Dave Gettleman, who's the GM of the Giants, I believe they're going to get a real live front seven type of player, whether that's an offensive lineman, probably a little too rich for their blood at 6, but a defensive player. That's a difference maker at number 6.
Yes.
And then I think number 10 comes into play because they've got 17 that they got from Cleveland for
Odell Beckham Jr.
So then I believe that the Broncos are in play. And if they roll down to 17, now you're picking up number 17 and probably going to get yourself a pretty high second rounder.
And this is the draft because every draft is different. You know, I have problems with Mike Evans. You know this, right, Stink?
Oh, yeah. Well, most everybody does, but go ahead. Yeah.
Because he thinks every draft's the same. Like, it's all crapshoot. Like, no, every draft is different, and this is a draft to have a nice group of mid-round picks, second-rounders, third-rounders. That's where there's a nice chunk of talent.
Right.
There's only, like, 16 actual first-round graded players. So Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network came out with his mock draft. He's got the Broncos at 10, taking Devin White. With absolute authority, Devin White won't be there.
Right.
At 10.
I agree.
Think both you and I know that.
100% agree with you. If he does get by Tampa, if Tampa decides, hey, man, we want an edge player, you know, and when we haven't had a great edge rush, and that's been the big difference. So we want an edge player, and we think there's a couple of linebackers, middle linebackers in the second and third round that have value that maybe a notch below Devin White, but are still really good three down players. Like, they're going to try to get it. If they try to go a different direction and do that, I think the very next pick at 6, because Tampa's at 5, the very next pick goes to the Giants. Like, they take him. Like, he is a sideline-to-sideline, three-down player. And if you've watched anything, and I mean, you studied this game at all last year, that's a huge, just look at what Vic Fangio did in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge need across the league. I know the Carolina Panthers didn't go to the playoffs, but if you look at one of the things that makes them so difficult on the defensive side of the ball is Thomas Davis and Luke Kuechly. Because instead of you dictating matchups to them and them getting those guys off the field because they need more coverage, those guys can cover Shaq Thompson too. He hurt his I think his knee later on the season.
It was like a young Thomas Davis.
Right. But he can flat run. So their ability to run and tackle in space and still defend the run. That's what makes them difficult. And just knowing Gettleman, like I know Gettleman, I would have a hard time believing if Devin White was there that they'd pass him up because he is one of those supreme players you're talking about.
Yeah, and Daniel Jeremiah is one of the most well-respected draft analysts out there, a friend of both of ours. Mm-hmm. And he's got the Giants going Daniel Jones at 6. And then at 17, taking Montez Sweat. I think Sweat goes in the top 10, and I don't think Daniel Jones goes at 6. I think the Broncos have totally covered up what they're going to do. I don't think anyone really knows what the Broncos are going to do at 10. And that's unusual a week away from the draft.
Do you think there's any possibility? Like, I just don't. I think that, you know, the the little trysts with all the quarterbacks, right? With bringing all the quarterbacks in here and whining and dining and doing all those things. I just think that is to drum up trade attention, whether it's Miami from 13 or Washington at 15 or the Giants at 17, like we've talked about. Even Cincinnati at 11, they have the potential of going after quarterbacks. So I just believe that all that has been nothing more than kind of subterfuge to say, hey, we will take one if he's there, if somebody doesn't come up here and grab him. That's how I feel like they've played this.
Right.
And I think for me personally, they've played it well because I do believe that John Elway has a guy that he likes. And that guy is tall and that guy's a pocket passer and that guy's got a big arm. And you know, that guy was Paxton Lynch, except for the fact that Paxton Lynch, you know, from the neck up couldn't handle playing in the National Football League. And, you know, and I think that John looked at that and overlooked that fact because he saw all those tangible things.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think he's learned his lesson, but I do take him at his word when he says, hey, I can see Flacco, you know, being here for a while. But that makes sense to me.
John Elway loves a quarterback this year. He wears number 5 and he's already there. His name's Joe Flacco.
Right. Yeah.
So, and by the way, Drew Lock falls to 30 in this mock draft. So I think you're going to see Kyler Murray at 1, and I think 2 through 10 are not going to be quarterbacks. 2 through 9. And right. Then at 10, you're going to have Haskins, Locke, Jones, Greer, all those guys available to you.
And then, yeah, and then it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be like a barker at the old fair, right? I mean, you're just being, come on, come see the show. You'd be like, you see that show, The Greatest Showman, where they're trying to get people to come in and see the freak show? It's just going to be John Owen, a top hat and tails. Like, come on in, see the show.
I'll guess your weights.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it's going to be.
Yeah, the NFL draft coming up in a week, and we will see if we get any clues as to what the Denver Broncos are going to do. What does Joe Flacco think if the Broncos are going to take a quarterback at 10? His comments, our reaction, next in the Morning Brew.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your Morning Brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to keep lightning, and you're going to crack thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and cooler stat.
Know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino.
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet s***.
Let's get it on.
I don't really care about whether they take a quarterback or not, whether it's 10 or whatnot. The only thing I care about is, like I said, I want this team to be as good as they can with me at quarterback. So if they feel like, if we feel like as a team, as an organization, we can add value to our team with a 10th pick, well, then I'm all for getting a guy that can add value to the team with me as the understood quarterback. But hey, it is what it is, man.
The understood quarterback and a whatnot. Joe Flacco says he doesn't care if they take a QB at 10. Stink, do you believe him?
Yeah, no, I don't think I have any reason not to believe him. I think Joe Flacco is very much like most veteran players. Like, I've told you this before. Back when I was playing with the Washington Redskins, I started my rookie year. In my second year, they ended up drafting. Their first draft pick was like a second rounder, because back in those days, under Joe Gibbs, he used to just give first rounders away. He didn't care about them. He wanted veteran players that knew how to play. Different time, you know, there was a different value kind of chart on that stuff. But our first pick was a second rounder, and he was the Outland Trophy winner, Mo Elowinibi, out of BYU. And I'm a second-year player. I'm going, oh, gosh, they already drafted somebody to replace me, you know, and oh, my goodness. And then he came in, and I was just like, really? You won the Outland Trophy? Like, are you kidding me? Just from a standpoint of not being ready to play at the NFL, not having the requisite strength and, you know, all that stuff. And at that point, Cecil, as a veteran player, I quit paying attention to who we drafted. Because it just got to the point where I always looked at it like, well, you can draft whoever you want. You cannot beat me out. I'm better than you. You know, it's like Globo Gym. Right? White. Right? White Goodman. I'm better than you. And I know it. Right? I mean, that's just the way it is. So I believe Joe Flacco's like, yeah, go ahead, draft a guy. I mean, he can't beat me out. I'm better than him. It was a different scenario in Baltimore, and there's no way Lamar Jackson's going to beat him out if he doesn't get hurt. It's not like they were going to make that move. He got hurt, and they completely scrap-piled what they were doing and put a college offense in. And at that point, they were on a run, and they weren't going to move. So, yeah, I take him at his word for that. He doesn't believe that anybody can come in here and outplay him.
Next to the Morning Brew.
I like everybody to watch them by themselves, form their own opinions, not be influenced by others' opinions, especially if I say something in a group setting that might influence their opinion. And, I don't want to influence their opinion at that stage. I want their honest opinion. And we'll all come together at the end and form a Denver Broncos opinion.
There's Vic Fangio talking about how he evaluates players and how he wants the rest of his staff to evaluate players as well. No group think here.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. Ed Donatell is the defense coordinator, and I talked to Ed. Ed and I go all the way back to the University of Idaho. He was coaching at the University of Idaho when I was playing there.
Wow.
So Ed and I have maintained a friendship over the years, and so, I've followed him around, and we've always stayed connected. He's a wonderful coach, a wonderful human being. But he's always like in his draft prep, he goes, I don't want to know what they run. I don't want to know how fast they are. I don't want any information. I just want to look at the film. And then I'll say, this is a guy, that's the best player. And he goes, now sometimes the best player doesn't fit into the draft parameters, meaning you got to run have a certain amount of speed, right, per position. But he's like, as long as you fit in a range, I don't care if you're in the bottom end of that range at, 4.7 or if you're at the top end of that range at 4.4, as long as you're in the range, all I want is the best football player. And it's an interesting way to do it. Don't give me any information. I don't want to know anything about it. Just give me the DBs that I'm supposed to break down or the linebackers I'm supposed to break down. I don't want any of their, underpants statistics. I just want to watch the film, and then I'll rank them. Now, if a guy is like, he's a great player, and you're like, I love this guy, but he's a 4.92 guy at the safety position, you're like, we can't draft him. He goes, then I understand that. I'll go to the next guy that's the best on my chart, but that's how I do it, and I don't want to be influenced by, like, potential though. Oh, look how fast he runs though. There's potential here. He goes, I don't want to know that. I don't want to know any of that. I just going to give me the film and I'll show you I'll tell you who I think is the best.
Sounds like that's a good plan to have.
Right.
Next on the Morning Brew.
Keenum dials up the deep ball and it's caught for a touchdown. Demarius Thomas,
a New England Patriot now, Stink. A lot of Broncos fans hate this.
I love it. I love it. I think that oftentimes, and I've said this before, and this will irritate a lot of people out there, the Patriots are always playing chess while everybody else in the NFL is playing checkers. There is absolutely zero risk here. If he comes back, you could probably start him on the PUP so you get an extra 6 weeks of the season to evaluate him. If he comes back and, is a good player, he comes back and he has, and he does unbelievable things and he's back, man, you've just picked up a really, nice asset for yourself. And if he just doesn't respond, you just cut him. It really doesn't cost you anything. And they do this on a consistent basis. And it's a really smart way to go about doing your business.
Yeah, and you either fit in or you don't. Now, would you have any advice for DT? Like, don't get caught up looking into Tom Brady's eyes when he's throwing you passes.
Yeah.
Because we all know you love Tom Brady.
Right. Yeah. And don't make eye contact in the huddle. Because if, Tom Brady's talking to you, just look down and listen. But don't look directly into the eyes of Tom Brady, because then you'll get mesmerized by, and you won't even, you'll break the huddle and you're like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do here.
Right.
And then Tom Brady will yell at you. So, I mean, he will. He'll tear you down.
Be careful for that.
Yeah. I am happy for DT. I love DT. He's a good guy.
Right.
Really is a good guy.
Right. Now we'll see if he can make his way with the New England Patriots.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Next on the Morning Brew.
Devin White, linebacker, LSU.
Just a call.
I'm a wrestling. The way I get you down.
Sacked. And who else? The defense pounces.
And I want to be the best linebacker ever.
Devin White, he's ready for it.
Devin White. The NFL.com latest mock draft from Daniel Jeremiah has Devin White, linebacker LSU, to the Broncos at 10. Stink, why is that a pipe dream?
Because he is so gifted, and in today's NFL, a guy that you never have to take off the field, that isn't a liability in coverage, whether it's man or man, or whether he needs some kind of drop, if he's a hook dropper, or if he's a, curl flat defender, that type of thing. A guy that can do that gives you an ability to dictate on the defensive side. Basically, you don't have to match up when offenses start trying to personnel you to death. You're like, no. We're not falling, for the banana in the tailpipe. We're going to go ahead and play our base here. And that is, I think that's the direction this league is going in. And if you watch, I think a lot of the really good teams, they have linebackers that are difference makers that never have to come off the field. Now, a lot of teams have tried to, you know, try to make all their safeties linebackers and all that, those kind of things. And it's worked to some degree because there's a lot of teams that don't make you defend the run. But when you get into a team like Kansas City, like New England, that will actually legitimately make you defend the run, like if you keep giving us small people, give us small bodies, we're going to bludgeon you, right? Give us big bodies, we're going to throw it over the top of you. And you have those type of players, man, it gives you an opportunity as a defense to say you can't make us, which I think that's a vastly underrated aspect of this game. And I think that's what, like, it's hard to find because everybody's looking for it, but it's hard to find it.
Devin White's the third best player in this draft. Like, I don't see any scenario where he's there.
All right, Quinnen Williams
number
from
one.
Alabama. Okay.
Nick Bosa, number two.
Nick Bosa, okay.
Devin White, number three.
Yeah.
Josh Allen, number four.
Josh Allen's an explosive dude now.
Yeah.
I watched some tape on him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, woof.
He can close on the ball quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, you just don't think about, which is interesting. Maybe we should change the way we think. We used to call Penn State, like, linebacker U, right?
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
it's been a minute for Penn State.
Look at what Kentucky has put out there, right? I mean, this is Josh Allen coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Trevathan, right? Wesley Woodyard before that. I know there's a couple other guys that have been. It's pretty solid what they've done. Woodyard's a hell of a football player.
Right. Has been for years.
Yeah.
So, well,
he's one of the best linebackers that nobody actually ever talks about or knows.
right. Listen, everyone would love Devin White at 10. Just don't get your hopes up. That's all we're saying. That's a wrap for the Morning Brew. You hear it each and every morning right here on Schlereth and Evans at 6:30. It's Cecil Lammy filling in for Mike Evans with Mark Schlereth. And, of course, we've got to talk about how the Nuggets avoided disaster. Earl Boykins joins us next to break down that game.
Your Coors Light is
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Well, we got to talk about those Nuggets, man. What a heart attack kids there and through most of that game last night with the Spurs. But they get it done, tie up the series, and to join us to break down the Nuggets, Earl Boykins, presented by Rocky Mountain Forest Products, RMFP.com. Make sure to check out Earl and Zach on the Mile High Hoops podcast at 1043thefan.com. Earl, welcome to the show. They got it done, brother, but it was kind of a little bit of a different way with the Blue Arrow getting it done.
Yes, it was. And thanks for having me on the show. I think the problem was last night, they didn't tell the Nuggets the game actually started at 7. The Nuggets thought the game started at 8:15. So it took them a little while to wake up, but they pulled out a great victory last night.
You know, down by 19, come back like they did, and obviously it was unbelievable what Murray was able to do. But you can't count on, you know, you can't count on going 8-for-8 in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's just not going to happen on a night-to-night basis. So you come away from that game, like, invigorated and excited, or you come away with concerns about the way they played the first three quarters?
You definitely have to have a little concern about the way they played. I think two big moments in that game happened in the first half, actually, when they were down. I think the way Paul Millsap came out, the first quarter was huge for the Nuggets because the Nuggets could have been down 30 easy in the first half if it wasn't for Paul. And when they got the 19-point deficit, when Coach Malone took the technical foul for what he thought was a foul on Jokic, it changed the game because right after that technical, the Nuggets were on a 10-0 run and they were able to get back in the game. But the way that the Nuggets are playing basketball is not great basketball. But the thing is, San Antonio, they're not playing much better either. And I think as long as the game is close, the Nuggets have a chance to pull out a victory in San Antonio. But you have two teams right now, they're not playing very good basketball.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that was interesting, and Malone had talked about getting out and running a little bit more, and they did that in the fourth quarter because they were knocking down shots. But I think the big difference for me, Earl, was watching a couple of defensive plays. Jamal Murray, I think Aldridge gets a rebound. He pokes it away and gets a steal. There was a play that I thought was tremendous that nobody's talking about. The Joker was fronting. I think it was Aldridge. And then he spins out and denies the entry pass, actually intercepts the entry pass, and that starts the fast break stuff. To me, that's what the Nuggets, if you take anything away from this, guys, we dominated the fourth quarter. Yeah, we knocked down shots, but we gave ourselves extra possessions because of the way we played defense. And for us to win this series, we're going to have to do that and start that in the first quarter, not just wait till the fourth quarter.
That is true. That is true. The fourth quarter, it seems that a lot of the Nuggets' mistakes throughout the first three quarters are being overlooked. But that fourth quarter, they played great defense. They played great defense, and for a young team, that's rare, because usually the way the offense goes, the defense goes. The Nuggets actually played playoff winning basketball by getting stops on defense and not allow them to get out and run. It's going to be a little different once you get to San Antonio, because the Nuggets haven't won there since 2012. So they don't have the experience of winning on the road. They still have young guys. This is their first road playoff experience. But I do believe that San Antonio Spurs will play better down the stretch. It's just a matter of will the Nuggets be able to match them.
Earl Boykin's our guest. He's presented by Rocky Mountain Forest Products, RMFP.com. And make sure to check out Earl and Zach By on the Mile High Hoops podcast at 1043thefan.com. Earl, you mentioned the youth and the inexperience in the postseason, obviously, with these Denver Nuggets. Isn't it just good for a team to know they can win in the postseason, even if it's ugly, even if it's coming from down 19 and having that fourth quarter like Jamal Murray had? Wasn't that kind of settling for this team? Can it have a positive mental impact because they know they can win and win ugly in the postseason?
Yes. I think the Nuggets are going into San Antonio feeling like they can win a game in San Antonio. If you look at another series in the playoff, you have Portland Trailblazers. They hadn't won a playoff game in 2 years. Just the win in game one gave them confidence to go up in that series 2-0. So I think winning always gives you confidence. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with Will Barton, because he's really struggling right now. He struggled last night. He was 1-for-10, 0-for-6 from the three-point line. You have to have consistent shooting. And I'm wondering what the Nuggets are going to do. Are they going to play Torrey Craig more? Are they going to play Michael Beasley more, who actually shot the ball very well? They're going to have to do something with Will Barton, because if he continues to struggle, he just can't be on the court the way he's playing.
Earl, how important has it been to get Gary Harris back fully and the efficiency that he played with last night?
I think Gary Harris, before the injury, was, other than Jokic, he was probably the most consistent player. I love Gary because he's the one Nugget that when he's healthy, he will compete on both ends of the court. The Nuggets have so many players that their offense depends on what they're going to do on the defensive end on a regular basis. He's the one consistent player that can play the entire game at a high level offensively and defensively without having major slippage in his game. And these first two playoff games, he's the one guy out of the young guys that hasn't been nervous. The moment hasn't been too big for him.
Game 3 in San Antonio, what do the Nuggets have to do to come away with a victory?
The first thing is start out the games better. Start out the games better. Because if you get down 19 again, you're not going to come back as easy. Because they will have learned Pop. That's definitely on them for the performance that they gave last night, especially at the defensive end, giving up 40 points in the fourth quarter. That won't happen again to a San Antonio Spurs team. You may get hot. You may play well offensively, but you won't score 40 again. The beginning of the game is going to be so important in terms of the success that the Denver Nuggets have. And as you said before, defensively, the Nuggets have to pick up their defense and basically play defense the way they did the fourth quarter. They have to do it for 48 minutes.
All right, real quick. I think the Joker, phenomenal nickname. I'm not sold on the Blue Arrow. I'm not sure that I like the Earl. Come on now, be straight with me. Does that got to change? The Blue Arrow is not a good nickname.
The Blue Arrow is a name that you hear only when he's playing well. When he's playing bad, he's Jamal.
Yeah.
Joker, no matter what, they always gonna call him Joker.
Right. All right. I just am like, I'm on a rampage here, man. I need a different. The Blue Arrow sounds like the superhero you don't want to show up to save you. Like, it's like the Green Lantern showing up to save you. Like, I don't know. You know what? You take the day off, man. I'm going to wait for Superman to come by. I'm just not sold on the Blue Arrow, my friend.
You're not into the two names. Just give me one.
Yeah.
One's enough.
Right. That's all. A nickname should just be one name. You can't go two name nicknames. I'm just saying. All right, man. Earl, man, it's always a pleasure to catch up, man. Always loved you as a player and obviously love you and what you're doing with you know, on the other side as an analyst. So we appreciate you, buddy.
Oh, guys, thanks for having me on the show. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, there we have him, Earl Boykins, presented by Rocky Mountain Forest Products. Again, rmfp.com. And Earl and Zach Bye getting it done. Mile High Hoops podcast. Make sure to check it out at 1043thefan.com. Why can't it just be the Arrow?
That's what I'm saying.
The Arrow.
Arrow. You don't even need the.
Just Arrow.
Arrow.
Just Arrow.
Yeah, the Blue Arrow is actually three names. That's a horrible nickname.
I'm so proud of you for knowing superheroes. Like, knowing Superman, you pulled that one out. Yeah, I was like, wow.
I don't really, I'm not, you know
Green Lantern?
Green Lantern, yeah, you don't want the Aquaman. Like, Aquaman, you can have that guy, too, you know.
Toss the fish.
Right. How are you going to help me when you're down in the ocean? Like, yeah, okay, the next time I'm swimming around, you're going to come save me. I'm not getting in the ocean. There's animals in there.
Okay, it's time for Stink to clear the air. He does that next.